This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here this week with Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Good. Welcome back from Canada.
Thanks. It was really cold. It was really cold, but it was a good trip. How was your Thanksgiving?
Not too bad. It was not as eventful as last Thanksgiving when we had the Flynn plea deal come out.
Oh yeah.
It feels like flashback. Yesterday and like 100 years ago.
I know. And I also expected a lot more to happen like in the interim, but things are happening. Things are heating up today. Well, first of all, let me also start by wishing all of our listeners a happy belated Thanksgiving. I hope you guys had a great time with families and friends, and thanks for giving us a break last week. We took the week off. But yeah, so let's get into it. There's some breaking news this morning.
Well, the official story for why we are late this week is because we knew this was going to come out, and we were delaying for that.
But yes, I'm sticking to that story.
The real story is we were traveling. This morning, though, we had an article come out from The Guardian by Luke Harding and someone else we've already forgotten that purports to be evidence that Manafort met with Assange three times, but once at the very start of his involvement in the Trump campaign.
Assange.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. Assange. Okay. Yeah, so apparently that he met... Wait. Did you say three times
Three times, but 2013, 2015, and March 2016.
At what point did he join the Trump campaign?
March 2016.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. But he was already connected to him before that.
I'm going to flag a note of caution on this one, though, because this article is all kinds of weird.
Why do you say that?
It's weirdly written. It's very weirdly sourced.
It seems like the source isn't the source the Ecuadorian security or like their own staff or something? Like they kept like records of who came and went, and they actually noted this guy was there. There's also notes.
No, there are no records. That was part of it, is that there were no typical embassy records. There were some Ecuadorian sources, that's clear, but like the big sources, well, the one that's definitely not sourced at all in any kind of reliable way is the idea that Manafort was there to meet with Assange. Sausage, whatever. And that I don't know about. That's what the part's weird to me. Like, why would you not, if you actually had evidence of this, why would you write your article this way?
Well, I will say this. I think The Guardian is a fairly well-respected source. But having said that, this also could tie to what happened yesterday, which I think it's important to talk about.
Which thing?
Last night, in fact. Well, last night, Robert Mueller and his team filed
a
memo. Right? So this could be tied to that. So let's talk about that.
Well, it turns out that Manafort's crimes and lies did not magically turn off once he pled guilty. He was supposed to cooperate, like in order to get a good sentence. His deal required him to be 100% truthful, cooperative. It was a pretty strictly written one, too. There's a little room for screw-ups. And apparently, Manafort has screwed up because yesterday, special counsel's office had a filing that said they're not going to, you know, give Manafort a break at sentencing. They want to go to sentencing right now, and they're going to say, give him the max, Your Honor.
Right. So what happened is they filed a status report with a judge, and it said, quote, Manafort committed federal crimes by lying to the FBI and the special counsel's office on a variety of subject matters. And I guess these lies are specifically lies that happened after the plea agreement a couple of months ago. And we'll find out the nature of those lies more specifically, I think, later they're going to come up in like the sentencing, whatever.
This is likely to be public. From what we know right now, it seems as if, I mean, they're just going to, there'll be a hearing. It'll be an open court. And they'll have to explain they can't just say, Your Honor, he lied, throw the book at him. They'll have to have some evidence of that he was not truthful in his statement. So we'll find out what the statements were and why special counsel's office is so convinced that they're lies.
Do you think that could be connected to this, Julian Assange?
It could be. It could even be something like, I mean, so Manafort, we know, is a consultant, a foreign agent, really, for a lot of interest in states and companies. And it's conceivable that his work was not with WikiLeaks, but with Ecuador itself. Mm. I mean, there are other reasons to go to the Ecuadorian embassy than to, you know, collude with WikiLeaks.
There could be, I suppose, if there's any evidence that he had any business.
He does.
That specific.
He does have
with Ecuador.
Yeah, he does have business with Ecuador. Okay. We know that in May of 2017, he flew to Ecuador to meet with the president on behalf of like a Chinese business interest.
Okay.
What could be going on here, and to just stab in the dark, is that they actually have some evidence that Manafort was at the embassy, but they have zero whatsoever that he was there to meet with anything WikiLeaks related. Mm.
But he might have just lied about ever going. I mean, it could be tied to that. It might not be tied to it at all. But I think it has to be serious enough. Number one,
there's lots evidence. Of things he could be lying about, and lots of things that Mueller's office could think that he's lying about. So I wouldn't necessarily.
They have to have some evidence.
Yeah, they do.
They have to have some evidence that he did lie, right? Now, what's going to happen now?
I mean, They've got Gates. He's cooperating too. I mean, It's not that hard to find someone's lying if you got Gates saying one thing and Manafort saying the other. And if they have more trust in Gates at this point, which they probably do, they're going to side with Gates.
What is wrong with Manafort? What is he doing?
He just loves loves meetings and he loves crimes. And when he can combine the two, he goes for it.
He's so – okay. Well, there's a part of me that thinks maybe it's just a matter of that he's like, I'm going to get pardoned anyway, so I don't care. I'll do whatever I want. Say whatever I want.
Sort of. That's probably – it's definitely part of his like strategy here. But it's a pardon's not going to be a magical fix-all for Manafort. Mm-hmm. He's – I'm sure he thinks he has a way out of this still, but it's it's a long shot at this point.
Well, his lawyers also actually added to that status report by saying – they're saying that he did not lie and that he basically told him what he thought was accurate. So I guess his defense is maybe I got something wrong, but it wasn't deliberate. I guess that'll come out in the hearing. But this judge apparently already is not very impressed with Manafort. And the analysis I'm reading is that he's likely to be pretty throw the book at him basically. And so let's see what happens. Right?
He was already witness tampering. You don't get that. Like, that is your only strike. Like, you don't get any oopsies after that. Mm-hmm. Any judge is going to be not particularly favorably disposed to him just because of that. And
Do you think he'll be sentenced? You think it'll happen this week?
I mean, I don't know how quick the scheduling is going to work there, especially in a case like this. It'll be relatively soon. We're not talking months here. Probably not this week, if I had to guess. I don't know. But yeah, this is not great for Manafort, assuming that there's any kind of substance to what's being said here by the special counsel's office. He'll probably die in prison.
Do you think this is I know every so often Trump just has to, he just can't help but tweet about Robert Mueller and the investigation, but do you think he's feeling the squeeze? Because there were like three tweets I think this morning just about
it's every Russia morning investigation. Every morning, like lately, it seems like.
Oh, is it every morning?
He just has some rambling string of random witch hunt, no collusion,
it's the same
Democratic collusion,
right, same stuff over and over. He's making charges against Mueller, too. Anyway, I want to talk about somebody else whose name – actually, I hadn't heard until now. I don't think we've talked about this person before, but also emerged in the last couple of days as somebody who is a target of investigation.
Are you talking about Jerome Corsi?
Yeah.
We don't talk about him because no one should ever have to talk about him. This is ridiculous. Like, I really hate the fact that, like, there is a political story going on that, you know, might possibly matter that involves Corsi, of all goddamn people.
Well, let's talk about who he is. I know about him is that he's a friend of Roger Stone, and he's like an author, a conservative author, right?
He's an InfoWars guy.
Oh, he is an InfoWars guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's an InfoWars dude. And he's also, it turns out, he's an actual PhD from Harvard. Go figure.
Huh.
Go figure.
Okay, well.
So Corsi's role in this, this is to me, the more interesting story this morning. I still don't think of that one either. But Corsi this has been going for a while in the background. And then the past couple of weeks, it's really heated up with like a back and forth, like, oh, I'm going to be charged with perjury. Oh, no, I'm going to plead with Mueller. No, I'm going to not plead with Mueller. Will he? Won't he? And then this morning, there was a Daily Caller article that is just bonkers. And I've been trying to like parse it and understand what could be going on here. And I got nothing because there is no explanation for this, that's not.
Well, I totally missed the article. So tell me, what is it? What does it say? What's the premise?
Of course, he came out with like, I guess it's an interview. And he chose Daily Caller to be, you know, a friendly outlet. But basically, here's what Jerome Corsi is claiming, that in a new book. So I guess he's trying to sell books, but whatever. He says that he had a joint defense agreement with Team Trump, and this means that, you know, you can share info and not lose attorney-client privilege.
Right.
And he says that. Well, one, let's start with Roger Stone. He says he and Roger Stone worked together to provide a cover story for Stone because Stone, like the ridiculous rat-fucking idiot he is, decided to tweet in August 2016, soon it'll be the Podesta's time in the barrel, with typos, so it's hard to know what he really meant. So apparently, Corsi was, he worked with Stone to develop a cover story for this tweet and to explain why he tweeted it. And he said, quote, Corsi testified that he and Stone hatched a plan, which Corsi would write a memo about the Podestas, to allow Stone to cite it as a basis for his tweet, which, you know, that would be a big deal for Stone if that's true. Stone has denied it. And he claims that he and Corsi really did discuss the Podesta brothers' activity. And that was like why he was going to, well, that's why he tweeted the tweet he never should have tweeted. So, okay, fine. Like, I don't ever want to believe Corsi, but I have to believe either Corsi or Stone. So I guess maybe go with Corsi here, except the whole story is bullshit.
Right.
So it's confusing. But here is the probably more, if it's true, and I'd want to flag that a million times, if it's true, the bigger part of the whole Corsi story is a claim that Sekulow, Trump's lawyer, the one that has his radio show or whatever,
right,
that Sekulow suggested, like, basically committing perjury as part of a defense of Trump, which, yeah, apparently the idea was that Corsi would be able to share information with the White House about the, you know, special counsel investigation, prosecutor, sorry, and then they could, like, work on a defense together that was not entirely truthful, which...
Wow.
I don't know. That's a
basically just come up with it. Yeah, just coming up with cover stories.
Did I mention how cold it was in Canada this past week when I went?
It's cold here too. Didn't get better.
I promise you it was worse. There's something about being right up there by all that water. But yeah, I felt like knives going through me. But I was nice and cozy inside my shoes though, because I went prepared with my Bombas socks.
Like, I was traveling like last week. Did not bring any socks, and it sucked. I got like back to the hotel, and I wore socks for when I was like walking around, but not for like at home sitting around with warm socks on, and I was very sad. I had to wear shoes in the house. It was awful.
I need my house socks. I need my house socks, and I love Bombas for my house socks. First of all, they're just some of the most comfortable socks I've ever used. They have re-engineered socks. They've got all these little comfort innovations, and they add up to just some of the most comfy socks you've ever had. They actually did 2 years of research, okay, to figure out how do we make these socks more comfortable. So they've got like this arch support system, which, by the way, I love those in the sporty socks because I use them to work out. It's got a cushioned footbed, so when you're taking a gentle little step, it's like you're walking on a cloud. It's got like this seamless toe. There's no more bump on your toes.
No more falling down around your ankles and like down by your heel, and you can't walk, but like every step you're trying to pull it up. Yeah,
that's right. And also, no more ugly ridge when you take off the socks and want to see your cute little feet. There's no
ridge
there.
I can't say that's a selling point for me, but glad it is for you.
I try to keep my toes done, and so every so often I want to look at them. But anyway, and one of the other things I love about Bombas is their spirit of giving, because, you know, for every single pair that they sell, they donate a pair. Now, look, we are in the winter season. We are also approaching the holiday season. We're in the holiday season. I mean, this is a time you got to think about other folks. And, you know, socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelter. People need socks to survive our winters, all right? So when you buy Mama socks, for every single pair you buy, they will donate a pair of socks to a shelter, all right?
And also, if you need a gift for Christmas, I mean, socks is a cliche, but this is actually good socks I like. So definitely go with this and not some other bullshit sock. And they're great outdoor socks too, but really, they're hands down the best work from home socks.
They are. Yep. Great gift. All right. So go to bombas.com/45th. That's BOMBAS.com. And you're going to get 20% off your first order. bombas.com/45th. And don't forget to use our code 45th.
Okay. I haven't read this article today, so I'm going to take a look at it. But, like, you know, what I read about yesterday was just that Corsi gave a statement that he said that, you know, Mueller's team is pressuring him to plead guilty. And he's like, if I pled guilty, I'd be lying, because he's saying that, you know, Mueller's saying that, you know, that Corsi was apparently the go-between between Stone and WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find that missing link, and that they're pressuring him to admit to being it. And he's like, it's not true, so I'm not going to do it. I mean, he said he's refusing a plea deal, but I wonder if that means that they're going to prosecute him then, or what's going to happen here.
We don't even know anything from Mueller's team. This is all coming from Corsi, and it's all rapidly changing batshit. I think it's safe to say now there really is some, like, for a while I was skeptical that really Corsi was even involved really here. Like, maybe it was this whole thing was concocted to sell books. And I guess that's technically still possible. In some ways, it makes more sense than anything else we got going on. But it seems like special counsel really is interested in Corsi. Now, what I refuse to believe, and I will not believe until I'm getting overwhelming evidence that it happened, is that Corsi was actually involved in anything serious. No one would involve Corsi in any kind of actual collusion scheme or any kind of, like...
God, I don't know, Susan. These people are idiots.
They are. But Corsi is still like, eh. I mean, no one, I don't want to say no one, but like, I just won't believe it. I can't. For my own sanity, I cannot believe that Corsi was actually part of any scheme. What I can believe is Corsi was part of a bullshit, like, not well-planned cover-up. So that part makes more sense to me. And I can believe that's why Mueller's interested in him. But
I mean, this was like a confederacy of dunces. Okay. Like these are people who I don't even think they were thinking that we are, this is not a conspiracy. It's not collusion. They're just like making shit up as they go along. And I feel like they don't even understand criminality when it hits them in the face. They are so used to operating in a criminal manner. It doesn't even occur to them that, oh, what we're doing is criminal, that they just kind of, do you understand what I'm saying? I really think Trump certainly doesn't. I don't think his family does. I think his lawyers also just, some of his lawyers are like that too. So I don't think it takes like a thought out like scheme so much, but as, okay, that guy's useful right now. So let's just plug him in here, plug that person in there. Just thinking they'll never get caught. Cause all these years, Trump has gotten away with so much stuff in his career, criminal behavior.
I guess. I mean, the wild card here is everyone has shit attorneys, which is not the usual case for like stuff of this magnitude.
Right.
So that is definitely hard to make, like, parse stuff. Cause usually you assume that the attorneys at least are in control and the attorneys are trying to manage things in the intelligible way, and we can't really assume that here, which means that a lot of
what's gonna happen to Sekulo? Anything gonna happen to Sekulo, you think?
I mean, probably not. I don't know. I mean, that yeah. part is the part I don't believe, because I don't know. There, I mean, Sekulo's not, he's not a good lawyer either. Like, he's a radio host.
Right. Well, let's talk about another story that is not directly related to this, but also kind of is, because it's about DOJ and it's about Trump maybe having some competent legal counsel with Don McGahn. Apparently, did you hear about this, where Trump wanted, just this past spring, he wanted to order the Justice Department to prosecute two of his political adversaries. He wanted DOJ to prosecute Hillary Clinton and James Comey.
I mean, that's not a shocking story either. Like, the fact we're still, like, we're barely remembering that happened is awful.
I mean, this is what I mean about, like, this guy. He doesn't understand what is ethical, what his boundaries are, what is criminal. But, you know, Don McGahn said, well, you can't do that. He had you don't have the authority to order a prosecution. He did say that you could request an investigation, but that could prompt all kinds of, you know, other problems, including accusations of abuse of power. So then what McGahn did was, he had White House lawyers write a memo for Trump warning them that if he asked DOJ to investigate these folks, he could face all kinds of consequences. But I mean, who knows if he actually read the memo, but apparently that it's not that it's gone away. He apparently continues to float this idea. The report says the president has continued to privately discuss the matter, including the possible appointment of a second special counsel to investigate both Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Comey.
Yeah, Trump is just a standard autocrat who's doing standard autocrat things. It's not that complicated. I'd say he doesn't care about, you know, constitutional limitations and all that, but he probably does not understand it either. And to the extent he does understand, he doesn't care enough to actually learn more. His goal is to use his position to maximize his power and to accomplish his agenda of having everyone love him.
Yeah. And to protect all his interests. I mean, like, to make sure.
And to get revenge. Revenge on his enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. Get revenge on his enemies.
But this is how, like, you know, this is how democracies backslide and die, because we now live in a country where you can float that idea and you are not instantly, you know, hounded by scandal for weeks on end. Like, that is a thing you can do and might have a little bit of pushback for a day, and then they'll go away again.
Happened. Yeah. Wasn't it like a month ago that pipe bombs were sent to all his political rivals? I mean, like, that story is dead and gone. So is, Khashoggi. It's just, the news cycle is so awful.
Well, here's the big thing. Democrats are going to be in power in January. In power, quote. Right. I use that term in the loosest sense possible. Sort of. Democrats will have a power come January. And that power.
Democrats didn't have power when they had power. Okay, yeah. I'll be honest here.
But they will have a power, and that will be to, issue subpoenas. But apparently, Trump's plan is just to resist all of them and not respond to them. And you know what? Right. He might get away with that, because guess what? He's got the court packed like he wants, basically. That means, like, we could just basically be living in a world where our assumption that laws matter is no longer viable.
Well, he does have the Supreme Court pack, but he has recently had some beef with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So last week, there was a federal ruling that said that Trump couldn't do what he wanted to do with the asylum seekers. What Trump had said was he would require all migrants to apply for asylum, like, outside of the country, which actually that's not even how the law works, that they would have to wait outside the country and do it there. That's literally, like, affirmative asylum applications only happen inside the United States. So that decision or that policy was like, no, can't do it. Federal Judge John Tiger, I think Tiger, of the U.S. District Court, North Carolina, California, said can't do it. So those cases get appealed to the Ninth Circuit. Trump has criticized the Ninth Circuit before. And he once again was talking about it. But then this is what he said. He goes, every case gets filed in the Ninth Circuit because they know that's not law. What? They know that's not what this country's for. Every case that gets filed in the Ninth Circuit, we get beaten. People should not be allowed to immediately run to this very friendly circuit and then file this case. Then he goes, the Ninth Circuit is really something we have to take a look at because it's not fair. Then the next day he tweets that he's toying dividing the Ninth Circuit into two or three circuits because it's too big. First of all, he cannot do that shit, can he?
Yeah, but like, first of all, and normally I'm like past the point where I think fact-checking Trump is useful or valuable, but the lawyer in me needs to point out, this was not the Ninth Circuit. It was a district court.
It was, but it can be appealed to the Ninth Circuit. Yes. I think that's what he's looking at. But he knows that the appeal's going to go to the Ninth Circuit.
This was not a decision from the Ninth Circuit. So like he's, I mean, I guess if you're trying to give him a bit of the doubt, you can claim he's preemptively objecting to a ruling that's not happened yet. But I just want to just, so people know, Trump is wrong about this. There's the Ninth Circuit, which is the appellate court, and then there's district courts under it. So,
right.
Okay, now that we're done with that part.
Well, they're going to appeal to the Ninth Circuit. But here's the thing, and I don't think Chief Justice Roberts has ever actually said anything public. It's very unusual for any Supreme Court judge or a judge in general to make any kind of public commentary on these kinds of things. But Trump talked about Obama judges and Trump judges and this and that. And then Chief Justice Roberts last Wednesday said that there are no Obama judges or Trump judges. He said that, you know, Bush judges, Clinton judges, what we have is an extraordinary group of dedicated judges doing their level best to do equal right to those appearing before them. That independent judiciary is something we should all be thankful for. So to me, I feel like Roberts is like, I've had enough of your fuckery and attacks on the judiciary.
Well, so it's not the first time, I don't know all the historical examples, but Roberts did have probably more guarded statement when, I forget what year it was, when Obama in his State of the Union criticized the result in Citizens United. I think he says, I can't remember what he said, but something like it's not fair for Obama to criticize the judges that just sit there and they can't react because of rules of decorum. And which, you know, that's not unfair at all. On one hand, Obama was totally right, and Citizens United is
right.
I mean, his claim about the foreign stuff, but that was totally true. It's playing out in real life right now. He wasn't wrong. On the other hand, I'm happier if no president ever comments on that kind of thing. But, you know, it was a very specific limited circumstance. It was not an attack on the judiciary. It was a comment on the consequences of a ruling.
Right.
If you're going to try and defend it, which it's not comparable to what Trump's doing at all. But even then, Roberts did make a limited statement about something. So it's not, you know, I know there's Grassley was like upset and he had some bizarre tweet about how, like, why didn't Roberts do anything when Obama attacked Alito, which one, never happened, and two, Roberts did. But in general, like, this is not a fight Roberts is going to win, and he's just helping Trump by getting into it.
You think so?
No. How is this going to help? He's just going to, like, use this as, like, ammo to, like, rally the base and continue his attacks. I mean, unless...
Right, but the base has no impact on the Supreme Court. None. They're not elected. They're not going anywhere. They don't give a crap about anybody's
base. The base does, because the base is a big percentage of the United States population. Not, like, you know, majority, but, like, we're talking 25% here. And if that much of the population lacks all trust in judges in the U.S., that's huge for, like, the consequences of how we function as democracy. And it's going to go beyond that, because Trump's attacks on it and his placement of clearly inappropriate judges on not just, like, district courts and appellate courts, but Supreme Court itself is going to undermine confidence not just in his base, but among everyone. So this is a real attack on the judiciary's independence, and it is going to have long-term consequences. And I think Roberts is, you know, as the head...
Feeding into it.
As the head of this institution, he feels obligated to do something and to, you know, just for morale, if nothing else.
Well, Trump didn't take it sitting down, obviously. He tweeted again after Roberts' statement a couple times on Twitter. You know, I mean, like, I don't want to read the tweets, but basically it's just... He said, you know, Justice Roberts can say what he wants. Ninth Circuit is a complete total disaster. It's out of control, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
It was more limited. I would say it was definitely more restrained than most Trump attacks. So even Trump felt like someone convinced Trump that there's, I mean, not much of a line, but there is a certain line.
Well, tweets don't even look like, he didn't tweet those tweets. They have good grammar, decent grammar. There's no weird capitalization.
He didn't attack.
I don't think he
Roberts himself. Yeah, so that's not very Trump-like.
Right. He didn't attack. Right. He just said, he basically said he disagreed. Well, what do you think about this idea about there are no Trump judges and Clinton judges and Obama judges? That's kind of not completely true, though, is it?
It's supposed to be true. And he's doing everything he can to make it not be true, because it serves him. Like, if he can pass the idea of, like, Trump judges can be a thing, then there could be Trump judges. That's what he wants. It's not the Obama judges he's complaining about so much. It's that he wants judges to be Trump judges. He wants judges that he can control and will rule his way and can be expected to follow party line. And that's not how it's supposed to work. And really, I mean, yes, there's always been conservative and liberal justices, but like Supreme Court is notorious for having justices that were appointed by, you know, president of one party, and those justices migrate in certain issues towards the other party over time. And I say party, it's the wrong word to use, because it's not party, it's just legal rulings. I mean, Roberts is a good example. I mean, Roberts is, I'm not going to remotely claim he's some, you know, liberal justice now, but he is definitely, if you were going to judge him politically, you would say he was much farther left than you'd expect from when he was appointed. And that's how it's supposed to work. They're supposed to be not political. They come in with a set of views, their judicial philosophy, certain like basic beliefs, but that's not the same as saying it's a political belief.
They're not appointed to further the any political agenda, basically. I think that's, you know.
Yeah.
But that's not how Trump sees it.
That's how Trump wants it not to be. So he's going to make sure that from now on, we have this idea in our heads that Trump judges will be Trump judges. So if you've never invested in the stock market before, Robinhood is here to help you through it, because Robinhood makes it easy.
Robinhood is an investing app. It lets you buy and sell stocks, options, cryptos, all commission-free. They make it so much easier to do it than if you were trying to figure this out yourself. They make financial services work for everybody, not just those who are wealthy.
It is definitely the most non-intimidating way to learn about the stock market for yourself and to invest for the first time with true confidence.
And the app is great. It's very simple. It's intuitive. It's got a really clear design. And, you know, I love like I get updates from my Robinhood app that, you know, this stock is up and this is down and this is what, you know, trends and different things happening. So it's like I'm learning a lot just by having the app on my phone.
And also best thing of all, there's no cost, no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. You trade stocks and keep all the profits.
It's kind of amazing. I still am trying to figure out how they're making money, but whatever. It's not my problem. Well, here's the thing. Now, Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, an actual stock for free, like Apple, Ford, Sprint, to help build your portfolio. All you got to do is sign up at the45th.robinhood.com. Once again, that's the45th.robinhood.com. So learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Don't miss this amazing offer. Once again, it's the45th.robinhood.com.
All right, so I wanted to talk about some other immigration-related news. We were talking about this all came out of this asylum ruling. Well, there are some pretty horrific scenes. I mean, I was in Canada when this happened, and I was just looking at it, and I was like, what the hell? I mean, if I saw these kinds of images happening at the Canadian border or any other – I mean, I just – like women and children and civilians fleeing tear gas volleys coming at them from our – U.S. Customs Border Patrol folks. You know, this caravan that's been coming, all these migrants, I can't get a decent number because the numbers that I'm seeing are coming from, you know, DHS, and I don't trust them at all. They're all a bunch of, you know, whatever. So they're saying about 1,000 people. It didn't look like that many people, but there were a group of people that are coming to the border. They wanted to basically apply for asylum or request asylum at the border or be given entry so then they could apply for asylum. And that has always been how that usually happens. That's an affirmative application. You could defensive application, which means you happen to be in the country for however, whatever reason you got in here, you're going to be put in removal, you're being deported, and then you apply defensively for asylum. But this is how an affirmative asylum happens. People come to the border and they say, we're here to seek asylum. So they closed the border to make sure they couldn't get in. This is the border between San Diego and Tijuana. A group of folks tried to push through this police, like it was like a police barrier. And there are reports that some folks threw some rocks, some guys threw some rocks, a couple of border agents got hit with some rocks, but nobody was injured. And then they fired back with tear gas. And those images are pretty awful because there are, I mean, children in diapers, like barefoot children, women running. You know, one woman said her, you know, infant passed out. And it's not like these border agents are so far from that they can see who they are firing at. You can see it, right?
And you also can't, like, don't use a weapon that you can't control, like, how targeted it's going to be when you know there's people there, there's children, like, who are probably going to be affected by it.
Right.
Or don't use it at all. Like, I mean, I don't know what was going on at that exact moment, but there definitely were other options that have been used time and time again. This is an escalation. I mean, if we've gotten this far without ever needing to tear gas over the border.
I don't think we have. I don't think we ever have had used tear gas at the border.
And there's no sign that what happened like yesterday was any different from stuff that's happened before.
Right. It's just shocking to me. But, you know, Trump also said that, you know, he tweeted that Mexico should move the flag waving migrants, many of whom are stone cold criminals, bullshit, back to the countries, do it by plane, do it by bus, or we will permanently close the border if need be. You know, to me, I know that the noise he's making about this, there are no facts. There's no evidence to support that these people are threatened any which way. This is all political. This is all to rally. You know what I mean? It's a thing that he can talk about. He was at a rally yesterday, and I think it was Arizona. I don't know where it was.
No, Mississippi.
But he was just like, oh, Mississippi. That's right, Mississippi, because he made some other racial.
God anyway, damn Mississippi.
He was just like, you know, you guys like what we're doing at the border? This is it. That's all this is. There's just no reason to do any of this.
It's just pure racism and like, you know, appealed national and then, white identity.
When he's questioned, he's about, you know, using tear gas against children. He's like, no, we didn't. I mean, there's flipping a video of it happening. And then he keeps saying stupid things like nobody's coming into our country unless they come in legally. It is legal. It is. I mean, it is in the statutory. It is law to come to the country and to the border and say I want to apply for asylum. These people are legally approaching the border. They're not illegally busing through the border.
And keep in mind, there's also this, aside from the immigration issue, not to like minimize that, but like this is a very busy border that people are traveling on
for work
and for like important economic reasons. You cannot shut this border down without huge economic consequences, which they don't care about apparently. Yeah,
that's true. Well, California should care about it. I'm trying to figure out what level of impact. Well, he hates California too, and the governor there too. But what level of impact? I mean, like, if their economy goes in the dumps because of this, if he wants to close the border permanently, maybe he won't give a crap. But I also wanted to briefly talk about tear gas itself. It's called CS gas, and you know, it's actually considered a chemical weapon that's been outlawed in war, okay, since 1993. Every single country in the world has outlawed the use of tear gas on the battlefield, including the U.S., but it's still we're still allowed to use it as a riot agent, which is kind of counterintuitive. And you know, if you look at where we have used it in the past, you know, well, most recently Ferguson, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Standing Rock, now at the border, there's a clear pattern. We do not use CS gas against white folks. It's almost always against people of color, and I think we really have to consider why it's not outlawed as a riot control method either. If it's outlawed in battle and war as a chemical agent, why the hell do we have this thing being used by law enforcement?
So all right, also happened this week is the GM plant closure in Ohio.
Yes.
And Trump, of course, did you read the Wall Street Journal transcript? It was I guess you should read it, but also it's just a bunch of
Was it, an interview with him?
Yeah, on like trade issues. And like it's just it's more painful because the guy did a good job of actually asking real questions. And Trump just like it's like talking to a baby. Like, those are words. They don't go in that order. They don't mean anything, but those are words you're saying now. And he doesn't know anything. He doesn't.
He's an idiot.
And his like perception of like this being an attack on him that GM has to close a plant. It's like it's not because of tariffs. I mean, this is a sign of what his policies are really doing. They're causing pain for production in the U.S., manufacturing in the U.S. It's not helping it at all. And two, I mean, I think there's a good chance we are rapidly hurtling towards a, you know, 2008 style crisis. And when that happens, what is Trump going to do? Yeah. Like things, I mean,
he's going to blame everybody else.
But it doesn't matter. He'll be the one doing stuff. He'll be the one who's in charge of it, doing something about it. And he's not going to know what to do. He's going to flail and make it worse. Like, even a minor recession with his flailing and, like, cause his identity is tied up with him, like, increasing the U.S.'s, like, GDP and all that. Even a minor recession could have him get more involved in the economy than he already is, and that would be a disaster. And it could, even if it's not bad at the start, it will be bad for too long.
Well, a couple of facts about this GM announcement. 14,000 people laid off. That's a tremendous amount of people. I mean, they're not just closing one plant. They're closing plants in Detroit, Ontario, Ohio, Maryland, Michigan. They're also going to stop making a bunch of cars. They're not going to make the Chevy Volt, the Impala, the Cruze, the Cadillac. I mean, a couple of Cadillac models. So, you know, it's also closing three plants outside of North America. I mean, this is huge. I mean, that's a lot of plants. Three plants outside of America. One, two, three, four. Like, that's like eight plants total. This is huge. Isn't GM the biggest American car manufacturer?
I'm not sure, but either way, they've recently gotten a giant tax break. And what happened to that?
They did. They got a huge tax break. And also the CEO apparently pulled in a huge bonus. And so I don't know. Well, Trump was upset of course, because he does think it's all an attack on him, but also he thinks this is something like, I don't know why. I guess for him, it's all about the political consequences, but he said he talked to the CEO, Mary Barra, I think is her name. And he said, I was very tough. I spoke with her when they heard they were closing. And I said, you know, this country's done a lot for General Motors. And that's actually true. And he said, you know, the U.S. saved General Motors. And for her to take that company out of Ohio is not good. And he told Barra that she had better reopen plants soon in the U.S.
I mean, he's a standard autocrat. He's not obeying, like, to him, laws of supply and demand don't apply. It's all about his power and forcing business leaders to, you know, not forcing, enticing them and forcing them to comply with what he sees as, you know, economic good in America based on whatever his feelings are. I mean, it's a standard autocrat's playbook, and it's not going to end well for us.
He also has some brilliant business ideas. He said that basically all they got to do is find a car that sells better.
Make better cars. I mean, I guess he's not wrong.
He's like, their car's not selling well. They'll put in something else. I have no doubt about that. They better put in something else. I don't know what that means. But another idea he floated was that
money.
He... Exactly.
Print more money. God, print more money.
Why not print more money? But I know it doesn't work like that. Yeah.
So what he's really upset about is the Fed. And the Fed has been raising rates because that's what the Fed does. I'll put aside criticism. Like the model has problems in its own. But like this is what happens. The Fed raises rates when things are good to stop inflation and to prepare itself for the next recession so it can cut them again and create the whole stupid cycle once over. But like it's not surprising what the Fed's doing. Of course the Fed's doing this. They were always going to do this. And Trump's really upset about it because one, he has got lots of debt and that increase is hurting his bottom line as well. And two, I mean, everyone knows that just brings us one step closer to economic catastrophe. So, yeah, print more money.
What do we do to save ourselves from that catastrophe? What is going to happen? I mean, like, are we looking at another, like, a housing crisis? Like, what do you think is going to – how this is going to play out?
I mean –
just a really high unemployment.
We'll find out what happens, if it happens.
I feel like all these factors are coming together, like, I mean, at breakneck speed. You know, you're going to have more layoffs. You're going to have increased cost of goods because, you know, all these – by the way, all these immigrants that we're preventing from coming in the country help keep the cost of our goods low in this country, including produce and stuff that we're not going to – you know, like, right now, farmers are, like – there are reports of farmers that just have crops rotting. They cannot find the people to harvest their crops.
Consumer debt is going to become unpayable, and then prices are going to increase, and it's going to be like – it's not going to be exactly like 2008, but it'll be similar. Who knows
what? Could that be what stops them in 2020? Could that be what finally loses the base, I guess? I mean, is that the only silver lining there? I don't know.
Not really, because like he'll still be in power and can still make things worse.
You mean like by selling our nuclear plans to Saudi Arabia, which is a story that maybe you guys missed this week?
No, that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah. This did happen. So, you know, some of the folks who follow me online know that about 2.5 months ago, I signed up for a very rigorous 6-day-a-week personal training and boot camp program. And I have been at it and committed. It's made remarkable changes, but I couldn't have done it without my vitamins. You know what I'm talking about, Susan,
right? You are the biggest Ritual fangirl.
I love Ritual.
You love that shit.
I love that shit. And I'll tell you why. Because I have for years had drawers full of vitamins. And I don't have the time. I don't have the patience. And I also don't have the capacity. Like, I don't like swallowing 15 different pills. And that's one of the reasons I love Ritual. 2 pills a day, you're done. That's all I need. And I have energy. I am done. It is easy. It takes me 30 seconds. And I'm done. I don't have to worry about, like, did I take that? What is the dose of that? It's dosed out. They taste delicious. You know, there's no funky aftertaste. It's got vitamin D3. It's got omega-3. It just fills in all the gaps in my diet. And honestly, because I'm working so hard on my training, I'm eating better. I needed this. I don't think I could have gotten, you know, this far in my workout regimen without. And by the way, I'm down 24 pounds. I feel great.
Congrats.
Yeah. But I needed Ritual to power me through this.
Yeah. And I was not a vitamin person, so I have not had all the bad experiences because I would never deal with that. I wouldn't take it at all. But Ritual is so easy that, you know, it's great. I don't know what the bad stuff is like, but this is definitely not.
You know why,
stuff.
Susan? You are a young'un. See, when you hit my age, you'll be like, shit, I need some vitamins, man. I feel like crap.
Also, I'm lazy, and that's a lot of work going through all these bottles.
It is
so
a lot of work.
This is the no-work way of doing it.
It is. And you know, the thing is, like, all your homework is done for you. You don't have to, like, I'm telling you in the past, for vitamins, I've had to search for, like, vegan vitamins. I have to search for all these things to, like, accommodate my dietary needs. And I don't have to do that because Ritual is vegan-friendly. It's sugar-free. It's non-GMO, gluten-free, allergen-free.
all the sources, you know, they're all transparent, 100% out there, and everybody can check it out. And they've basically covered all your bases. So what are y'all waiting for? So whether you're living life or creating it, add some good-looking science into your daily routine. Go to ritual.com/45th and start your ritual today. You will not regret it. That is ritual.com/45th.
So here's the report. The report is that apparently apparently leading up to, I mean, fuck Rick Perry. But anyway, up until, you know, everybody got diverted by, you know, the story, which they rightly should have, obviously, of the assassination, the murder, the dismembering of Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul. MBS, Mohammed bin Sultan, you know, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, had been negotiating with our Department of Energy, okay, and the State Department to get the U.S. to sell designs for nuclear power plants to Saudi, okay? The deal was worth about $80 billion, depending on how many plants Saudi Arabia decided to build. Now, what they were saying is we just want to be able to build our own nuclear power, okay? But here's the thing. They said they're going to produce their own nuclear fuel, even though they could get it cheaper abroad, which raised some concerns because they could divert that fuel into a weapons project. And that's exactly what we've always been concerned that Iran has done or, you know, can do. And the thing is, earlier this year, MBS had said that, you know, Iran and Saudi are like just fierce rivals. So he said, you know, if Iran developed a nuclear bomb, then we will follow suit as soon as possible. Now, when he's saying stuff like that and then trying to negotiate buying our plans to build nuclear power plants.
As soon as possible means you better be ready to go when that happens. That means you are working towards being ready to launch. So you're not years and years behind. And, you know, it sounds like this all goes back to the stupid Flynn stuff from 2016 when he had that big plan to have Saudi power plants. And they have not let it go yet.
This guy is dangerously ambitious, and I can absolutely envision him, Iran or no Iran, wanting Saudi Arabia to be a nuclear power. Now, look, I think kind of globally about this issue. I don't know why some countries get to be a nuclear power and some countries don't. I think in a way it's a leveling field. You know, I was born in Pakistan. Pakistan is a nuclear power. It has helped protect the country, is having that. I hope it's never used.
The more there are, the more likely they're going to use. That's what it comes down to.
That's the thing.
More there are, the more likely that the whole world's going to suffer catastrophically.
Especially by somebody who's like willing to like dismember a general. I mean, like, you know, when you have dangerous, violent, horrible people in power. And of course, Trump will be gone and then we'll still have to deal with this shit later on. But right now, our Department of Energy and our State Department has been negotiating this. And my feeling is when you look at numbers like $80 billion, that they're going to continue to do so. Because that's for Trump, that's the bottom line. Also, he loves this man.
Who knows what kind of dirt Saudis have on them? Because God knows there's been enough like dealings, like not political, but like
I don't even know if financial. It's dirt. It's just money. All Trump cares about is money and business prospects. You know,
and
I mean?
In like, the course of that, they give dirt on Trump from that. So,
yeah.
Well, in other Trump comments from this week, a report came out that apparently on two separate occasions, he talked to the president of Iraq about getting their oil to repay for our expenses in the war over there.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we came over there and destroyed you. Now pay us back for it.
Yeah. Okay. He has not dropped this idea. He has been on this for like half a decade now. He really wants to get Iraq's oil, and apparently he's not letting it go despite the fact it's completely untenable.
Well, untenable unless he orders like an invasion to get the oil.
Yeah, I don't think I don't even know. I would like to think that one there's enough, not that I believe institutions saving us. I think institutions might save us in that case. Maybe I'm being too idealistic there.
Well, or he might decide it's not really worth it because he's going to be on the outs anyways at this point. On some level, I know he wants to do the one thing that'll impress everybody in America or the world. Speaking of which, about impressing the world, he also, I don't know if he tweeted or he said it, I can't keep track of all the different ways his crazy comes out, but he talked about how CNN makes him and America look bad in the world. So he's thinking of starting state television. State-run media.
I mean, we already have Voice of America. What more do you want?
We have Voice of America.
I've
done interviews with Voice of America for their South Asian programming and stuff. And most of what Voice of America is, and yeah, it is propaganda.
It's soft PR. Soft PR. It's not full-on state media, though.
No, it's not full-on state media. It's not political in the sense that
it's soft, you know, political. But what it's just trying to expose people to America, make them like, hey, look what America's like.
Exactly. So they'll be like, for example, in South Asia stuff, they'll be like, oh, here's South Asians living in America. These are kind of what their lives are like. This is the work they're doing. And, you know, look, they're happy Americans and we treat them well and whatever.
But otherwise, journalistically, kind of it's not slanted necessarily beyond.
No. What Trump wants is
actual state media.
I mean, he's got Fox News. He's got Fox News. What else does he want? But anyway, all right. I don't know if there's anything else.
Oh, there's lots more, but we'll leave it for next week and we'll see how this Manafort stuff shakes out.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks for filling us in on that stuff. And, you know, Robert Mueller, come on. Christmas is around the corner.
Godspeed, Mueller.
Godspeed. All right, guys. We will be back in 1 week. Thanks so much for listening.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.